Okay, so for tonight, I don't remember how many of these questions we've asked in the past and never answered, but I'm going to do one for sure that we've asked and never gotten back to by request of one of our regulars in the shiur that we should eventually get back to it, and another one that I don't think I've asked, but we'll see. So first one, which is really the second one I just referred to, I don't think we've asked in the past, but I keep getting questions along these lines. I'll read you three questions that are really all very similar to each other, because it's all on the same topic, but two of them came today, one of them I got a little while back. A woman has two children, is expecting her third child. Each of her first two labors were extremely difficult, and her mother was very instrumental in keeping her calm and focused throughout labor, which means her mother must not be Jewish, because I don't know any Jewish mother that would keep someone calm in the labor room. I would think it would be more anxiety-ridden. But anyway, but her mother was instrumental in keeping her calm. And now, due to COVID restrictions in the hospital, she's only allowed to be accompanied by her husband. So facing the prospect of a labor without her mother present is causing her a lot of anxiety, and she insists that she needs her husband to hold her hand throughout the labor in order to keep her calm. May he do so. May he hold her hand. That's one. On along similar lines, a guy was with his wife in the hospital, and she was in active labor, and there was a shortage of nurses in the hospital due to corona. They were all stationed, in other places, and the staff asked if he might be willing to hold one of his wife's legs in order to help with the labor. This was a little while back. And then a third one I just got today, an anonymous shaila. Someone writes, "Hi, Rebbe Lubitz, my wife is due with our first child. Today happens to be the due date. She's extremely nervous. We're told that she becomes a nida with all of the accompanying restrictions from the time she begins to bleed, and the doctor should let us know when this happens. My wife has been feeling like she's going to need to hold or squeeze my hand, or for me to provide other forms of physical support, and that this will provide her with peace of mind in a way that having someone else do it will not. If she's at a point where she feels that she needs to hold my hand to calm her down, or for me to have physical contact in some other way, is there any heter to do so?" So those are three shailas shahim echad, right? That's one topic. The other topic, which we've raised but never addressed, I think it might have been even just last week, was an email that I got where someone said that his father is of advanced age. I'll read it to you. "My father is of advanced age and lives alone in Chicago. He has only distant relatives living near him. I'm an only child. I grew up in Chicago, but my family and I live in New Jersey. We visit as often as we can, but it's proven more difficult lately because of COVID. My father is Israeli, but he's lived in the U.S. for nearly 50 years. His entire family, including his mother, grandparents, uncles, and aunts, as well as my mother, who was Nifter in 2019, and her parents, are all buried in Israel. My father has made it clear that after 120, he wants to be buried in Chicago. He does not want to be buried in Israel. He realizes very few, if any, of his relatives will visit his kever. He has a sister and nieces and nephews all living in Israel, as well as me and my family in New Jersey. It's unlikely that we would be in Chicago to visit his grave all too often. My question is, would it be mutter to arrange to bury him in Israel, knowing it's against his express wishes, but that he'd be buried with nearly all his family and would have far more visitors to his kever? Or would Kibbutz require me to bury him in Chicago with the understanding that he'd receive few visitors over the years? I know that moving a body to Israel's mutter, as it serves as an aliyah neshama to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. Is this a similar situation? Could we move him to Israel after kavura has already taken place in Chutz Laaretz, knowing that he wouldn't want that to take place?" So the first shaila is about physical contact to calm a woman down during labor, and the second shaila about burying someone in Eretz Yisrael against their will. So let's use the thing to vote. Ooh, it's a close vote, and it's no longer close. Okay, so touching during labor it is, and we'll. Oh wait, no, is it? But that's everyone? No, did everyone vote yet? What do we have over here? One, two. Oh boy, okay. Do we have a tie? I think we have a tie. Oh wait, do we have a tiebreaker? Ooh, we have a tiebreaker. Okay, a come from behind victory for the second shaila. All right, we'll have to get to the first shaila some other time. Wow, that was exciting. That was a nail biter. Okay, so let's begin. This one good thing that came out of Zoom is this. I enjoy this every week. It's very exciting. Okay, so Shlomo, is that an actual background or is that a virtual background? It's virtual, right?
Virtual.
Yeah, okay. I was talking to one of my Talmidim last night, and I'm like, oh, what are you reading? And he's like, no, it's just a virtual background. I don't know what these books are. Okay, so the Shaila really breaks down into a few different parts over here when we talk about the Kavura issue. First is Kibud Av La'achar Misas Ha'av. To what extent is there a mitzvah of being mechabed the parent after the parent is no longer around? Then we have a general concept, a broader concept of mitzvah L'kayim Divrei Emes. Then it's worthwhile to discuss the value of Kavura Be'eretz Yisrael, and then and what that means as far as moving somebody to Eretz Yisrael. And then maybe once we have all of that down, we'll be able to come to some clear halachic conclusion. So let's start with Kibud Av La'achar Misas Ha'av. The Gemara in Kiddushin Daf Lamed Beis tells us very clearly, Tanu Rabbanan, mechavdo b'chayav u'mechavdo b'moso. You're supposed to honor your parents both when they're alive and after they are deceased. But the Gemara elaborates, b'chayu ketzad, hanishma b'dvarav v'makom lo yomar shalchuni b'shvil atzmi, elukul b'shvil abba. B'moso ketzad, haya omer dvar shmua mipiv, lo yomar kachamar abba, el kachamar abba mari areni kaparas mishkavo. So when you do something of significance during the father's lifetime, you say that it's in the zuchus of your father. After death, the way to be mechabedim is when you quote him, you don't just say, so said Abba, you say, Abba hareni kaparas mishkavo. And then the Gemara goes on to say, what is kibud generally when a parent is alive? Machil, mashke, malbish, mechase, machnis, motzi, physical support. You help them, you feed them, you give them to drink, you help them get dressed, you take them shopping, and all of this is paskin in Shulchan Aruch Yardes and Reish Mem, Siv Test. There is some discussion in Poskim about that phrase, Hareini Kaparas Mishkava. I think I discussed it recently in a shir. If a child says, Hareini, oh, it was in this year, I think, when we were discussing donating years of your life. If a child says, I don't want to be the Kapara for my father. My father was no good. You know, the Kapara is probably going to be too much for me to handle. So does he have to say, Hareini Kaparas Mishkava? Meaning, how literally do we take it? Is it meant literally that you would like to take the brunt of the punishment for your father? Or is it just a term of honor? So Rav Avadya says that we only say it when we're quoting Divrei Torah. Rav Avadya Yosef writes that it's the Gemara doesn't say every time you quote your father. It says Hayomer Dvar Shmua Mipiv. Dvar Shmua means a Dvar Torah. That when you say a Dvar Torah, so it's a sign of respect in the most respectful way to quote your father in the context of quoting Divrei Torah. Now Rav Kivega writes in a tshuva that there's a major distinction between these two types of kibud, b'chayv and lachar moso. He writes that nachas ruach, like machilo mashkeo, to prevent sar of the parent, only applies during his lifetime. Meaning, there's one element of kibud av aim, which is to do nachas ruach, make him happy, do things that will please your parent. So that only applies during the parent's lifetime. There's no nachas ruach after the parent dies, because the parent, there's nothing that you're going to do that's going to please them in the way that we understand down here on earth. There's aliyas neshama, and there are things that are beneficial to the neshama, but not in the regular relationship way that we have bein adam lechavero, down here in Olam Hazeh. However, there's another element of kibud, Rabbi Kivega writes, which is kavod ugedula be'etzem, something that's simply a term of reverence or acting with reverence, like saying Abba Mari, and that part applies even la'achar misa. So based on that, Rabbi Kivega first thinks to say that if a living mother asks you to do something against what a deceased father had asked, there's no mitzvah to listen to the father because there's no longer any nachas ruach in it. Meaning, if what the father had requested is simply a matter of giving the father nachas ruach and not a matter of reverence, there's no mitzvah to listen to the father anymore after he's no longer alive, because it's not giving him nachas ruach anymore. Matters of reverence, that you have to still use after he dies, and therefore the kibud aim would win, Rabbi Kivega originally says. But then Rabbi Kivega concludes that being mekayim etzava'a of the father is part of mora, not to go against his words, and that's the part that applies even lachar misa. I mean, you can't say, well, my father asked me for this, but and had I done it, it would give him nachas ruach, but if that was his dying wish and you don't do it, that's a profound lack of mora. That's a profound lack of reverence. So, and the reverence part applies even after he's deceased. He even even includes mitzvah liyusomim lefra a chov aviyem in the category of mora, that the yusomim have to pay back a chov of their father because it's disrespectful for their father to have a reputation of someone who left this world in debt and never took care of his debts. So to pay back your father's debts is also a matter of mora. So as far as that issue of whether there's an inyan of kibud, if a parent asks for something that, you know, for after they die, it seems that this would fit into the category of being reverential to the parents when they ask specifically to be buried in that place. And then you have a broader obligation that even if it wasn't a parent, there is a concept called mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. It's a sugya in Gittin, daf yudale, daf tezvav, where there's a machlokas tzanoim, whether mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, in a case of holich mana l'ploni, says, I want you to give this money to so-and-so. And at the end, the Gemara says, kaimelon mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, that there is a mitzvah to fulfill the divrei ames. So in Tshuvas Binyan Sion, in Chelek Beis, in Chav Dal, Rabbi Yaakov Ettinger points to three other places where we find that the Gemara implies at least mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. He points to two cases in Ksubas Daf Samach Tes, Mashal Shmaus Lebito, Ha'omer Tenu Shekel Lebni, Gittin Daf Mem, Ploni Shavchasi Asuli Karas Ruach, whatever the cases are, three other cases where you do find this notion of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. The problem that the Bali Atosos raise is that there are other sugyas in Shas that imply that there is no mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. In the case of the Gemara in Gittin Daf Yud Gimel, has of Ha'omer Tnu Manalish Ploni Umeis, Yitnu Lachar Misa, right? If you say, give this, if someone says, give this money to Ploni, and then he dies, you give it even after he dies. The Gemara says that the money is tzavur, it's already piled up and designated in a particular location. And Rav Zvid comments in the Gemara that the Mishnah is talking about that it's a bari ubekinyan maimed shloshtan, that he made this request while he was healthy, and it was with a kinyan of a maimed shloshtan. Whereas Rav Papa says, no, it's about a shchiv meira. So Tos says, why not say it's a bari, and you have to give the money without even a kinyan of maimed shloshtan, because mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, meaning just the very fact, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, should be enough in order to be mechayev. Furthermore, the Gemara Bava Basra, Kuf Mem Tes, tells us of Isur Giyura left money by Rava, and the Gemara asks how Rav Mari Bar Rachel, the son of Isar, can acquire the money after his father dies if Nichse Ager are Hefker, and his father, he was Isur Giyura, he was a Ger. So Tosus wonders, why not just say mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, because that's what he wanted, and you have to do whatever he wants, and mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. But the Gemara doesn't say it, so it sounds like the Gemara is not working with that principle of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, or at the very least, that we have to modify that principle, that it's not just, you know, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, whatever the person wants. Tosus asks why we need divrei shchiv mira kiksuvin kumsurin dami, if anyway mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Meaning, why do I need a principle that when a shchiv mira says something, it's kilu he made a kinyan, that a kiksuvin kumsurin dami. I shouldn't need such a klal, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. So you got to do whatever the guy said. So the Rishonim see clearly over here that mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is not, you know, this universal concept that applies to every single thing that a person who's now deceased had requested. I once had a shayla years ago, we discussed in one of these shiurim also, about a guy who grew up in a very yeshivish family, and the hat and jacket was very, very important to his parents. It was something that like was very important to his parents, and he became more modern, you know, at a certain point he wasn't frum, and then later on he came back to frumkeit, but he came back to modern orthodoxy, so he's a jeans and t-shirt kind of guy, you know, especially on like a Sunday or whatever. And when his mother was dying, his mother said, I have one request, that after I die, when you say Kaddish for me, you do so in a black hat, that you wear a black hat. So the shaila was, is there an inyan of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames in such a circumstance? So that was a more complicated circumstance, because to him a black hat was not just stam, you know, something to wear. It wasn't just stam, an outfit. It's what he viewed it as symbolic of that which led him off the derech for a number of years. And it was something that's, you know, more emotionally traumatic for him, not something that he was excited to do. But anyway, but the question is, so what is the limitation? Is mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames just on anything? So Tosus in Gittin and in Bava Basra quotes Rabbeinu Tam, Delar mina mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames ela b'dover shehu shosh metchil l'kach b'yad shlish. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is only about money and if you give the money to a third party to deliver that money after death. Short of that, there is no mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. That is a very significant limitation on this principle of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. This Techemed in Marecha Samem, Klal Reish Yutes, explains the logic. He says, Iker din mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, hu kidei sheyehi libo nachonu batuach sheyikayimu dvarav lachamisa, v'lo titrov taituk sheyenota lamaves, b'chshash lo yikayimu dvarav. He says, mitzvah kaim divrei meis, so that the person shouldn't feel uneasy about what's going to be after he dies. So that he should feel confident that that which he requested is going to happen. So he's got to set up some system where it's already in motion in order for that to have that confidence. So you got to have it in the third party's hands to take care of. Beis Yosef quotes Ramban that we only apply mitzvah kaim when he told the Yorshim or the Shliach directly, that it has to have been direct and instructions. Similarly, the Ri says, not just a shtar, he has to say it verbally. So, La Halacha, the Shulchan Aruch and Chosha Mishpat, in Reshon Beis, Si'if Beis writes, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Meis, Afilu Bari Shetziva V'Meis, V'hu Shenosno Achshav L'Shlish L'Shem Kach. Shulchan Aruch only quotes this Inyan of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Meis when there's a third party that is holding on to the item and has been instructed what to do with it after the person is deceased. And the Sma adds that it also has to be Shenosno Shetziva L'Yorshin L'Itein, that he gave explicit instructions what to do with it. So it sounds very much that it's only in Dinim Amunis, and it's only when there's a Shlish. Nevertheless, Rav Moshe and Choshe Mishpat Chelik Beis Simen Mem Beis writes, Av Sharabu Ari Shodim Shasavi Shalomahani Al Kolpanim Hasma Vashach Vachena Rama Bechuva Vira Kivagra Bechuva Savri Karit Vashem Ra, the Mahani Bekiblu Aleim Lakayim. That maybe you don't need a Shlish, maybe if they're just Makabal on themselves to be Makayim, that's also Mitzvah Lakayim Divra Meis. There's a Machlokas if it's a Mitzvah Daraisa. The Ramban says it's derived from the Tzava of Yaakov Avinu, or it's Drabanan, Tosin Ksuba says Drabanan. Rav Moshe writes, even if it is Drabanan, there were Machmir Afilu B'Makom Safek on Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Meis. And in the Tshuvas Divrei Yatzvim, Chosh Mishmas, and Chav Ches, Kleisenberger discusses whether it relates to Kibra Ve'eim or to the Mitzvah of Nachalos or to the Gemilas Chesed Im Amesim. Meaning, why Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Meis? It's an offshoot of something, meaning if it's a Din Drabanan and it's not directly learned from the Torah, so what is it? Is it Kibra Ve'eim? That's why Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Meis. Is it part of the mitzvah of Yerusha, that Yerusha goes to Yorshim or wherever he designated that it should go to? Or is it a gemilas chesed im amesim? It's a kind of chesed that you do with mesim. But regardless of all that, again, it seems to only relate to things that are about money and kinyonim. The Divrei Yatzev has a chakira, whether it's like a kinyon or just a mitzvah, and he has many nafkaminas, a beautiful lamdus. But bottom line is, mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is an often used term, and I should say an often misused term. It really has nothing to do with this topic. It's really only about dinei mamonis. A person say, I want to be buried in this location. I want to be buried in Chicago and not in Eretz Yisrael. Even though the only reason the kids ever visit Chicago is because dad is still there. As soon as dad's not there, they have no interest in being in Chicago. They have no, they're not going to go for the beautiful weather during winter vacation to Chicago. There's nothing drawing them to Chicago. I mean, you know, Ken's is great and whatever, but you know, that's not going to be the reason that they're going to spend vacation there. I don't get paid for that plug, but you know, that's not going to be for the reason. They're not going to be visiting the Kever ever, but they'll always be in Eretz Yisrael. You know, it used to be that they would say that people didn't want to get buried in Eretz Yisrael because they wanted the children to be able to visit the Kever. And now people are realizing that if you want the grandchildren to be able to visit the Kever, you better get buried in Eretz Yisrael, because that's where the Jewish world is gone. Meaning, if it's not going to be you, it's going to be your children. It's not going to be your children, it's going to be your grandchildren. Be'ezras Hashem. And we hope that that's true and that trend continues. But it certainly seems like that trend is continuing, right? How many people who have grandchildren who are married now don't have at least some, you know, if you have a large family, at least some that are in Eretz Yisrael, right? That's a good trend. It's a halavai. But it's not. It's anyway. So what about Kvura Beretz Yisrael? Is there there any, you know, any inherent value in that? So first of all, it's lots of people are flown to Israel for burial, even in the height of COVID, when planes aren't flying, and when, I don't know what it is now, but I know back in April, I was at a Levaya in the airport, right after Pesach, in a local small airport, and we were just loading bodies onto a private jet because there were no flights going into Israel that were carrying bodies, but we were just, you have this private jet with mahogany and everything, it's gorgeous, and all it is dead bodies on the jet. It was unbelievable, just piling up coffins to fly to Eretz Israel. People chipped in and they paid whatever it cost to fly a private jet to Israel, and that's what they did. You know, it's expensive, but this is a very big value for people. It's kedai, you know, the I guess it's kedai to have people who have private jets, you know, for these Shasat Chag situations. I was listening to David Lichtenstein's podcast recently. He was talking about spoiling our children and what kids get used to, and he said that he has a friend who only flies private. And he was taking his kids somewhere once, and the jet wasn't available. So Nebuchadnezzar had to fly first class. So they were sitting on the plane, and as other people were boarding the plane, the little kid turns to the father and he says, "Dad, what are all these people doing on our plane?" You know, so like, there's a certain level of you know, of expectation that could sometimes be set. But anyway, so people will pay exorbitant costs to be able to have kavurah Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov and Yosef, both requests being taken from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. This week's parasha, right? Moshe getting Yosef's bones. Oh, Henry writes in right. So this week's parasha to get Yosef's bones for kavurah in Eretz Yisrael. Yaakov requests alma tikparei to Mitzrayim. Shachafti mavos have necessity in Mitzrayim. Kvartani b'kvura sam. Yosef says, "V'ishpa Yosef is bnei Yisrael. Ever pakod yifkod alukim eschem valesim esatz mosai mizeh. Dvarim dalil chavbeis ki anochi meis parutz azos in any over siyadin v'atem over mirashem esaritz atova azos." That Moshe Rabbeinu is so upset that he doesn't get to go to Eretz Yisrael. Why is kvura Eretz Yisrael so important? So the Gemara in Ksubas Nav Kuf Yud Aleph tells us that kala kover Eretz Yisrael is kilu kover tachas hamizbeach. That it's like being buried tachas hamizbeach. Proximity to the kisei kavod is apparently important. The Gemara in Ksubas Kuf Yud Aleph tells us even further: Mesim shebechutz aretz einem chayim. That mesim shebechutz aretz are not going to be chayim. Are not going to have tchias hamesim. So says Gemara, what is that possible? Tzadikim shebechutz aretz einem chayim. So Amar Rabbi Loi Ali de Gilgul. Yeah, they'll be chayim, but it's going to be through tunnels. They're going to have to, like, their bodies are going to have to go through the discomfort or maybe the lack of honor of having to go through mechilos, through tunnels underground, in order to get to Eretz Yisrael. Whereas if you're in Eretz Yisrael, so without the mechilos, without the tunnels, you go straight up at Tchias HaMesim, get straight up at Tchias HaMesim. The Rambam, the fifth parak of Hilchos Melachim, even when quoting this minhag, says it's much better to be there when you're alive, based on Yishalmi. He says, Omer Cham Kol HaShoch in Eretz Yisrael, Avonos of Mechulin, Shenemar Obal Yomer Shachin Chalisiya Am HaYoshev Ba Nosei Avon, Afilu Halach Ba Arba Amol Zochel Chayal Maba, V'chein HaKovur Ba Nischaper Lo, Ukilu HaMakom Shu Ba Mizbeach Kapara. He says, it's great to live in Eretz Yisrael, to walk in Eretz Yisrael, but it's also very valuable to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. He says, Tzeilumad, Mi Yaakov Avinu, V'Yosef HaTzadik. What better role models do we need about this than Yaakov Avinu and Yosef HaTzadik? So the question becomes, So why not? Why would anyone not want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael? So there's a passage in the Yerushalmi in the ninth parak of Kalayim where Yerushalmi writes, "Rabbi Bar Kiryav, Rab Lezer, haven metailin bi istarin, ro'u arono sheibon michutz loretz la'aretz." Am Rabbi Bar Kiryav, the Rabbi Lazar, "Mahu ilu ani kori alem nachlasi samtem l'toeva b'chayechem v'tov v'titmus arzi b'misaschem." Am le kiven shein magin la'aretz Yisrael hein noten gush. They were walking, they saw coffins arriving in Eretz Yisrael, two gedolei Amoraim, and they applied the pasuk v'tavo'u v'titmu'u, that they're coming and they're defiling and they're being metame the land in their deaths. They couldn't be mekadesh the land in their lifetime with their Torah and mitzvos, and now in their death, they're coming and being metame the land. The Rama in Yardesh, Shin Samach Gimel Aleph, says that that's the basis for the minhag to bury people with dirt from Eretz Yisrael, that there is a kapara that's provided provided from the dirt, and that's what it says, that they put a little bit of dirt on the coffins. The Zohar in Parshas Vayechi says it's not appropriate, and Yaakov was an exception. That the Shechina was particularly connected to Yaakov, and he belongs in Eretz Yisrael, but doesn't mean that we all belong in Eretz Yisrael. Sefer Chassidim writes that it benefits the mace to have relatives come daven at the grave. So if you live in Chutz Lartz, it's not a great idea to be buried in Eretz Yisrael if you want to have relatives daven there. So we just painted two very different pictures. On the one hand, there's this great value, according to the Gemara at the end of Ksubas, of being buried in Eretz Yisrael. And on the other hand, the Yerushalmi seems to say that it's like it's almost inappropriate. You didn't live your whole life in Eretz Yisrael, now you're going to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. There was one secular newspaper when Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, when Rav Moshe Feinstein died and he was brought to Eretz Yisrael, to Har HaMenuchos for Kavura, there was a secular newspaper that, that had the chutzpah to run a headline that on the day of his Levaya, Achshav Huba? Which is essentially, obviously a horrific chutzpah to say about Rav Moshe Feinstein. He obviously had very clear cheshbonos and was very much needed in Chutz Laretz, but on some level, it's that feeling of, why can't we go while we're alive? Why should we only go in our death? But nevertheless, there is great value of being buried in Eretz Yisrael. So what do contemporary poskim say about this? So they say Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Yaakov was buried here in America because by choice. He wanted to be because he wanted his children to be able to visit the kever. Rav Henkin thought it was just wrong to spend so much money. It's much more important, he thought, to support Talmud Torah. That he thought it's yuara to spend all this money on Kavura Eretz Yisrael, that there are more important, meaning it is a value, but there are higher values in terms of what you're going to spend your money on. Now, we have, in our communities now, someone texted me this week, I think we don't have a tuition crisis, we have a spending crisis, that people spend on much sillier things. So to say that, that it's the wrong thing to spend on, it really depends who you are, and what are the other things that a person spends on. Rav Vosner writes in a tshuva in Chelik Beis in Reish Zayin that even if you wouldn't get any kapara, because you have to live there to get kapara, it's still worth being buried there to avoid the tsar mechilos, that it's kedai to avoid that the tsar of the tunneling through. In Tshuvas Divrei Yatziv, Chelik Yutzim Reish Chavdal, he was asked about moving a particular Hasidish Rebbe, and he said that since none of the Talmidei Abesht were buried in Eretz Yisrael, it must be that they were very concerned for that Zohar, that those who live their lives al pi Torah Hanistar maybe are going to be less inclined, ironically, to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. In Tshuvas Tzitz Eliezer, Chelik Yiral, Simnayin Hey, he says there's no question we pass on like the Bavli against the Zohar. It's a big mitzvah, something kedai to do, something worth doing. Okay, and what about moving someone from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael? So it's before the Shulchan Aruch. So the Mishin Samach Gimel Shulchan Aruch says, "Ein mefanan ames v'atzamish." You're not allowed to just stop move a kever. Lo mekiver bazel lemchubin. You're not even allowed to move from someone from a less respectful kever to a more respectful kever. Right? There are some communities where they have cemeteries that are just not taken care of anymore because the children are no longer alive, the grandchildren are no longer alive, or don't care anymore, and these cemeteries aren't really well cared for. So can you move them to somewhere that that's a more popular place to bury people now, where the cemetery is more cared for? So the Shulchan Aruch says, no, you're not allowed to do that. But ukedei lekavro beretz Yisrael mutter. But to bury in Eretz Yisrael, that you're allowed to do. V'imnasnu sham al menas lefnosu mutter b'chal inyan. Whenever you bury someone al menas to move them, that's for sure going to be mutter. Again, in the height of COVID, there was a lot of that also. There were people being buried in Chutz Laretz with the plan to move them to Eretz Yisrael. But you don't even need the plan. You don't even need the al menas when it comes to moving to Eretz Yisrael. You're always allowed to move to Eretz Yisrael. However, that idea that you're always allowed to move someone to Eretz Yisrael, that's when the person did not say explicitly not to be moved to Eretz Yisrael. If, for whatever reason, and we don't know the reasons that this person has, now the person's alive and well, I told the child, go speak to him, tell him, that the great value and how you're all going to visit and no one's going to visit in Chicago. And he said, I tried a million times to reason with him. I tried to explain it to him. He just won't budge. It could be that he's being mocked for the Zohar. Maybe he feels that it's that it's not right, that he feels so guilty as someone born in Israel and then living his whole life in Chutz Laretz, that he feels like the Achshav Hu Ba, he feels like, what, now I'm going to come to Yisrael? It could be that he feels guilty about that. It could be that he has some inkling that that he has a Hasidish, whatever, a feeling that he's got to go with the Zohar. I don't know what his reasons are. But the point is, it is an explicit wish that was expressed by the father. And as we said before, when there's an explicit wish expressed by the father, it's not mitzvah l'kayim divrei meis, but it's probably kipirav, la'achar misa sa'av, because it would be considered a bizayon to the person, or at least not properly reverential of the person, if one ignores their explicit wishes. So I told him, try to talk to him and convince him, but otherwise, I don't think you can go against his explicit wish, nor do I think you can move him afterwards. The moving him afterwards, again, is with the assumption that that's what he wants. And you can't say, oh, now he's in the Olam HaEmes, so now he sees the light and he sees that I'm really correct. Right? That's what they say about the Litvisha guy who had a Hasidish son, and he told the Hasidish son, when you say Kaddish for me, no viatzmach porkane, right? When you say Kaddish for me, I only want regular Kaddish, no viatzmach porkane. And after the father died, he said, no problem, ta. And after the father died, he says, viatzmach porkane. And they said, what are you doing? He said, now my father knows. Now, you know, in the Olam HaEmes, he knows what the right thing. So you can't do things like that. You're not allowed to, make cheshbonos like that. If he has an explicit wish, I just wanted to make sure. So I asked Rav Schachter if I was correct about this. He said, 100%. He said, you can't do against his wishes. If that's where he wants to be buried, that's where he should be buried. He's not asking to do an avera. He's not asking, to be buried in his shoes or whatever other crazy things people sometimes ask to be buried in his football jersey or whatever. He's not asking something crazy. He's asking something that's within the halacha. Even though you don't understand it, you have to honor the father's request in that case, as difficult as it may be to do so. Okay, everyone have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.